What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game.
Because you know, like at camps and stuff like this, you take the ball out, you ain't getting the ball back. Like, you the last one up the court, they already did their thing. So I stopped there, and I just got into a rhythm and started hooping.
The Lakers should sign Trae Young this summer.
They got to kind of start preparing for, like, if LeBron's last year is this year or next year, whenever it is. And I feel like a pick and roll with AD and a guy like Trae Young would be deadly.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Welcome back, all the smoke, New York City. Jack, it's cold as a motherfucker out here, Brian.
Freezing.
I had to put some extra lotion on to keep the ash away. Man, today we got a good one, man. One of the OGs in the game, someone I've always looked up to from afar. Man, Rod Strickland. Welcome to the show, bro.
OG, appreciate you having me.
My guy.
So for currently sure. Head coach at LIU in Brooklyn. Yes. How did that come about and how's that been going?
It was weird because it came kind of overnight. I was working for the NBA G League, kind of managing Team Ignite, and I was loving it. I was there for, two and a half years.
Were you out there on the West Coast?
Yes. Well, I first was here in New York, in the New York office every day. And then as the team transitioned to the West Coast, I went with them. And so I was there every day, but traveling, recruiting, you know, just kind of running the program. And I just got a call out the blue. And it was kind of like, if LIU, would you be interested in Long Island University? And coaching had been in the back of my mind. But I went to the NBA office because I wanted to eventually go to a front office role. You know, that was the idea of going there. And so, but once I got that opportunity, you know, I kind of tried to work in like a 5-year period and kind of like, okay, where am I going to be in 5 years? And, you know, I wasn't for sure if I was going to get that opportunity, you know, as a GM. So I didn't know, you know, how far that could take me. So I knew I had this opportunity for 5-6 years. So I said, let me go ahead and explore this opportunity. Had a conversation, sat down with the president, and I just kind of jumped on it. But I mean, it happened within like a week and a half period, right? So it was wild because when it happened, I got hired like July 1st. You know, that's unprecedented. Mm-hmm. You know, all the recruiting is gone, mm-hmm. everything. Right. No one gets hired at that time. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of jumped in the fire. You know, I hadn't been a head coach, but I said, I'm going to go for it. You know, I took the job. You know, it was funny because I had to stand in front of these. Like, I took the job, like I said, a week. We were talking about it, you know, how we were going to bring it out. It actually got out earlier than we wanted it to get out. So then I had to get in front of it. Mm-hmm. So I had to go in front of these young kids that were already on the team with the coach, like just one day, pop. Now I'm standing in front of them.
I'm your new coach.
Right. So that was weird and awkward for me, but probably more for those young guys.
Right.
That was an experience. And then I had to jump in. I had to get a staff. And, you know, I had to get on the ground running. But, you know, it's a process.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, going from I'm like an executive in the NBA to like actually being a head coach. Mm-hmm. You know, I was assistant coach in college, obviously, but I had never done that. And we know that next seat is a beast.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had to undergo that process. You know, I had a struggle first year. You know, I had a lot of young guys and it was tough on them because the top six guys left.
Oh, damn.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So now I'm playing with guys or that probably wouldn't have played much.
Right.
So now I'm there, you know, I'm Rod Strickland. I'm pushing them like that's like a ghost, you know? So like it wasn't even unfair for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we struggled. And so a lot of those guys left. I brought in some new guys. And, you know, we've had a little struggle this year. You know, I played a road schedule in December. Like, we was on the road the whole December.
Mm-hmm.
You know, playing against UCLA and Miami and Rutgers.
Mm-hmm.
But the guys are fighting. You know, now we're 2-1 in conference. We just took a bad loss. You know, but we've had injuries. You know, like for the first month and a half, we played with 8-9 players in practice. So, you know, you had to dry run.
Yeah.
Can't mm-hmm. get up and down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then we got healthy.
Unless one of the coaches is going to dust them kneecaps off.
I went out there a little bit. Yeah, a little half court, you
right.
know.
Yeah, yeah.
A little half court on offense, you know.
Right. I'm going to stay down on this side.
But you know, I'm enjoying it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a challenge. It's a process. You know, the kids are being developed. They're getting better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to keep growing.
That's
you know,
right.
this is a process. It's not going to be overnight if you're not patient. You got to stay over there and let me just mm-hmm. figure this out. But it's a process and it's going to take time.
So I get a chance to coach in the summer. I coach my kids' AU team. And something I've known about this next group is communication is key. Like we used to have coaches that would yell, cuss, scream, whatever.
Yeah,
and we just did our thing.
Yeah.
These kids aren't like that. What is the biggest difference you feel like in the Hoopers these days? I feel like they're highly skilled. But I feel like some of them, because it's so much one-on-one, they lack the IQ of the game. Like if they don't have the ball in their hands, they have a hard time playing basketball.
Yeah, so that's where I kind of confuse, right? The skill and IQ kind of got
to
go together.
It's supposed to be.
You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I think, so I don't know what it is. I think it's kind of lacking the skill and the IQ. Because I think, so I'll say for me, like I know when I was raised as a Gaucho, Dave McCollins was my AAU coach. And I know when I stepped on the court, I learned from day one that it wasn't about me, right? So I learned from day one, I'll never forget, if the big gets a rebound and he runs the floor, you better give him the ball,
mm-hmm.
right? And there were just some things that were instilled in me that never made it about me. So I played with the Gauchos. I grew up from 10 or whatever years, and I was always one of the best. So I was first best, second best, whatever. But even when everyone felt I was the best, I never knew that, right? Because my coach never dealt with me like that, right? And if I didn't come perform, others performed. And then you had to take a seat back. So now you had to figure it out and come back and play.
Mm-hmm.
So me going up the ladder, I never thought I was the guy. I always was trying to figure it out. We give it too soon now,
mm-hmm.
right? And then sometimes I don't think young people understand that you got to be able to make others better to be better.
Mm. Right.
And so we give them too much too soon and we tell them they're everything. And I've seen it, right? I've seen it working with the G League, with Team Ignite, just going around and watching it. And I've been in college basketball, so I've seen it. And, you know, I can tell it when I see it, when, you know, you got the surroundings, you got the people around you, and everybody's kind of pumping you up, and they want it to be easy. They right. want to put you in the best situations mm-hmm. and cater it to you. Mm-hmm. Well, you got to go through adversity. I went through adversity my whole basketball life.
Period.
Because I always kind of felt like I wasn't good enough. Now I got to prove myself. And so I kept growing. And I think sometimes we give it to these young kids too soon. Think about it. In fourth, fifth grade, they think they're pros.
Yeah.
Like, they'll tell you a pro. Now, just think about that from a young, immature mind. Like, you don't know no better. Mm-hmm. And you can get full of yourself easy.
And the parents be getting full and of the Kool-Aid, too.
Well, that makes it even worse. Mm-hmm. But we didn't have, well, I know mm-hmm. my parents, my mother and father didn't come see me play till I was, I think, in eighth, ninth grade. And then they sporadically came. Mm-hmm. So even when I failed, I had to go back home and no one said anything mm-hmm. to me. So I had to figure it out myself. So if I was embarrassed, I got to figure out, man, I don't want to be embarrassed right. no more. So let me go back out there. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole different agenda and mindset. And even adults, you know, think about it. I know when I was coming up, the adults that we had that were teaching us, they were all about trying to show like how good they were. Mm. Like I'm gonna show them I'm the best coach. But now you got all these other entities and it's a money thing.
Yeah.
So now the agenda and everything is just different.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You spoke to 5-6 years, kind of your plan here. I mean, do you see yourself college, MBA? And if you do, is it coaching? Is it management? Or are you still kind of figuring that out?
I always feel like it's basketball.
Period.
Like, I love basketball. Mm-hmm. And I think I've had so much experiences. You know, I think if you look at my resume, like, as a player, as a college coach, won a national title, you know, I've been around the top players, whether it's Memphis, Kentucky, Team Ignite. You know, now I'm a coach now. So I feel like I'm geared to do anything in basketball just because of the experience. Right. And the knowledge and, you know, just, yeah, the experience for the most part. So I think I can touch anything. So I just want to keep being a part of basketball, keep growing. You know, I feel like I'm 57 years old and I'm lucky because I'm still growing. Like, mm-hmm. I'm still having opportunities. Mm-hmm. That's not easy.
Right.
And I think I've set myself up, even through the adversity and everything, I've set myself up to have opportunities. And I don't even know if I knew I would have these opportunities.
That speaks to the person you are, though.
Yeah.
I mean, we say that a lot, too. You know, we wasn't the guys in the league, similar to you, that was all over the commercials, that was winning all awards. But the people we are allowed us to be able to still get blessed and be in this space now. You know what I'm saying? So that says a lot about the person you are. Growing up.
But I don't mean to cut you off, but you know what? I think people understand authenticity.
Right.
Mm-hmm, right? Yeah. Even if you mess up, period. Even if things go, mm-hmm. I think they know who my core is,
yeah.
regardless, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mitchell Projects, the Bronx,
mm-hmm.
70s and 80s, watching Dr. J, Walt Frazier. What was that like growing up?
Man, it was great. It was a fun time. Like, it was all about basketball. You know, when I step foot out of my apartment building, come downstairs, go through the park, and there's Mitchell Gym. And then there's a park there, park up the street. And it was all about basketball. And I walked in that gym, and my first NBA player sighting is Nate Tiny Archibald. He's in my gym with a little basket, his own basket on the side. You know, the little basket mm-hmm. where you got to shoot it straight in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was his basket. So I get to walk in there and be inspired by that. And then I had older brothers, my brothers Byron and Steve. Like, I looked up to them. And even the older guys around the neighborhood, I wanted to be like them. You know, they were hooping and competitive. And then I had my guys that I grew up with. But everything was about basketball, right? It was nothing else. I didn't have to worry about, you know, I had a father who didn't play. So, but I looked up to my brothers and they were like hoopers. So that's what I aspired to be.
Mm-hmm. We had Cameron on our show and we was talking about, you know, the top 25 NY hoopers, point guards. And Sebastian Telfair had a lot to say. I can't wait to get him on the show. But I definitely have you in my top 5 point guards from New York. Talk about so much talent and all the stars that, you know, New York was able to produce.
Yeah, well, see, I'm one of them, man. I respect New York so much, and I respect the B-ball aspect because I was raised in it, you know, on the playgrounds. And it ain't just about the pros. I mean, those street ballers and everything, those guys I had to play against every day, like, they challenged me. So I got my competitive edge because of that. So I look at the whole big picture of New York City. We've had a lot of great guards, and I just think we, you know, got to show some humility. You know what I mean? Like, I look at you, we had Lenny Wilkins, Bob Cousy, right? They're a little before me. I don't know a whole lot, but I know, you know. But I know we got Nate the Skate,
yeah,
who's top Nate 50, top 75. So let's not forget that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you got, for me, you got the great Pearl Washington, who I idolize and kind of patterned the in and out, the throwing the ball out in transition, the sliding around a defender. That's Pearl Washington. You know, and then you got, you know, obviously you got Action Jackson, Mark Jackson, you got Kenny Smith, you had guys named Kenny Hutchinson and Ed Davender, you know, Boo Harvey came up with me. And then you walk into the Steph Marberry's, the Kenny Andersons, and the Skip the Malou. Then I turn on the TV one day and watching Iowa State, and I see some Jamal Tinsley. Who is that? He's nice, right?
Booker
you
Smith.
Know? Then you got Kimber and Cole, and, you know, all these guys. And I hope I'm Shamgard.
Yes.
So, like, for me, man, like, I respect it because I've been inspired, whether it was someone before me or after me. I'll never forget when we were with the Knicks. And me and Mark Jackson, I think we had an exhibition game in Atlanta, and Kenny was playing. We were like little kids with Kenny Anderson, and he was a college kid. You know, watching, you know, he come out of practice, we talking. But, like, I get excited about that. Like, if I saw Steph or Kenny and him or Skip, like, I'm excited about it. I don't measure myself up there. And I'm sorry, Sebastian is and all that, too. But I, you know, like, I don't, I could care less, right? I could care. The toughest guard and just the toughest guard, when I look at it, to be, like, quite honest, stepping on the court, the toughest guard was Steph Marbury. Like, I just, if you look at his resume, you know what I'm saying? Like, let's be
real,
honest.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, then you got Mark Jackson, who's like eyes behind his back, you know, mm-hmm. Kenny Smith, a champion. Skip the Malou, like Ray for Austin.
Trendsetters.
Come on, man. Skip mm-hmm. went from this b-ball, street ball, right? And he could have bought into all that. Right, but he figured a route.
He wanted to show that street balls can play in the NBA.
But that has to, you have to give him a lot for that. Mm-hmm. He went this route and got to become an NBA player and became be an NBA player. And man, Skip was killing like he teams in the championship. Like, you know, he was something.
Yeah.
And then you got Shamgard, who has a signature move. Like, right. Who wouldn't want, you know what I mean? So there's so many things about. New York guards and Sebastian, like his high school career was
amazing.
Crazy. I just think young fella got a little survivor's remorse,
mm-hmm.
and we all do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he'll mature and understand that, you know, sometimes you got to reflect and you got to figure out what you did wrong,
right?
And
right.
why that happened to you. And I think in time, you know, that'll happen.
We
for
all
him.
Grow into that.
You all grow into. That's why when I listen to him, I'm not listening to who he's talking about. I'm listening to him
mm-hmm.
and what he's saying. And listening to him, you can understand it's a little survivor's remorse.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
What does Gauchos mean to you?
Everything. Jump started everything for me because that was the first time that I go outside of New York City. And now I become, you know, worldwide and worldly and see different things and play against different players. More importantly, and the Gauchos is obviously big time important, but my coach of the Gauchos, Dave McCollins, you know, he's the one because I'm coming from Mitchell Projects. We were the Mitchell Bullets. And he went to the Gauchos. I don't know the whole story, but he wound up coaching the Gauchos one night. And Lou Dalmeida gave him an opportunity to be a coach. And he told him he couldn't be a coach unless he takes us with him. So we were like the first generation of the young guys. Because Gauchos had like a, I guess, junior and senior team. So he brought along this 10-year-old team, you know. And then, you know, the rest is history. But the Gauchos is a big part of my basketball history. Dave McCollins is probably more important because he taught me how to play basketball.
I think a high percentage of NBA players got to experience Gauchos. You know, it's just like going to the Rucker. You got to play Rucker. You got to play Gauchos if you are a real hooper. You know what I'm saying? Especially in the summertime. Oak Hill Academy. I was honored to be able to go there for my senior year and become a McDonald's All-American. You were basically the trendsetter. Coach Smith, shout out to Coach Smith. He said everything changed when you showed up.
And so for me and a lot of everybody else that came after you, we owe it to you because Oak Hill saved our life. If I wouldn't have went to Oak Hill my senior year, I'd have been dead in jail. I wouldn't have graduated high school. And I went there for 1 year just to get my life together. And that place does a lot for guys who have the opportunity to go far in basketball, but can't see too much from now. You know what I mean? And it gets you there and it keeps you focused. So I appreciate you for going down there and starting that for us to open them doors. But talk about Oak Hill and the experience you had and what was the decision in going down there? Because for me, I didn't want to go.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? No girls.
Same here.
Uniforms.
I didn't know that, but same here.
Yeah, uniforms, all that. No tree. I wasn't going. Yeah. But I saw the bigger picture.
Yeah, and that's when, like, Sebastian talk about culture. Like, that's culture. You know what I'm saying? I think sometimes you got to look at when you start talking, it's a different way because, like you said, from that, look at everyone who's gone to Oak Hill. Yeah. Sometimes I don't think I get enough credit for that.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
A lot of people don't know that.
That's culture. But Oak Hill, I had just won a state championship with Truman High School, won the city and state, got MVP, made the last shot of the game to win it. And I was looking forward to going back to Truman. I had a backcourt mate named Arnold Bernard, who I swear, to this day, I talked to him. I said, that's one of my biggest regrets. I wanted to go back to Truman and play with him because I probably could have won another state championship. But my high school coach left, Steve Lapis. He got assistant coaching job at Villanova. I think Villanova thought they were going to get me, you know.
Because it gets you by association.
Yeah, so he became the head coach there. And so this is the ironic part, and this is my pettiness, right? Because I hold grudges. So I was at Rice High School my first year, my freshman year. So going into my second year, I wanted to play varsity. So back then, you could play freshman, you know, when you're a ninth grade, a freshman, 10th grade, varsity. That was Catholic high school rules. So I wanted to play varsity in my 10th year, and they wouldn't let me. So they moved me up one day because I told them I was going to leave. Went up there, played well. Then the next day, they basically said I couldn't do it. So I transferred to Truman for my sophomore year, and then I was there for my junior year. So now as I'm leaving, the head coach who was at Rice gets the job at Truman. So now I'm like, I don't want to play for him.
Fucking with you.
You know? So it was funny because I had to convince my moms, because Steve Lapis told me about Oak Hill. And my mother, you know, she don't know nothing about that. I'm from the Bronx. She ain't trying to send me way out to Virginia. So I was up like all night, like, Ma, no. I gotta go. And then she said, okay, let's go talk to the coach. So we went to Truman and spoke to the head coach, and he was kind of arrogant, right? So I was like, perfect. And when we got out of there, she was like, do what you gotta do, you know? And I went to Oak Hill Academy, just got on the plane, went to Oak Hill, never forget, got off the plane, straight to the gym, and went to work.
How did that process happen though, like to connect with Oak Hill?
That's
like,
the Steve Lapis.
You know,
like,
knew
I don't
Steve
know,
Smith?
You know how when you're young, you don't know all of
yeah.
So I'm sure there's more story to it. They need to do an Oak Hill story one day, but I'm sure there's more to it. But, you know, I just know I was headed to Oak Hill.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine was my AAU coach, Josh Pastner. They had to connect with Steve Smith.
Yeah.
But mine's similar. I won the state championship.
Yeah.
Junior year, wanted to go back, but it wouldn't have benefited me at all.
But the funny thing, you know, Coach Smith wasn't the head coach when I was there.
He
was the assistant coach, Larry Davis.
Larry Davis, okay.
And I couldn't stand him.
Yeah.
So I'll never forget. Like, you can ask Coach Smith this. Coach Smith was my head coach because I wouldn't listen to him.
Larry.
So coach would have to like tell Rod, like, I mean, it was seriously like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like him at all.
Coach Smith is the guy though.
That's my guy. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't survive.
Can you tell him to run this play, not that play?
Yeah.
Not this play.
Yeah, nah, it was, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Coach Smith is the guy. It makes sense why he took over and had so much success. Give me your Oak Hill starting five. All time starting
five.
That's
tough.
That's super tough.
That's tough. You know, that's tough. I'm not even putting me in it. That's tough.
But don't do it then.
All right, I'm gonna put me in.
You got to. Because it's four names that have to be on the list.
Right. Well, it's Carmelo, it's Durant. I'll put myself. But it's hard after that because I got to think now. Like, I don't know. You got to give me some name. I can't, like, think. I know those three right away. And I got, like, I love Rondo. Like, I'm the biggest Rondo fan ever.
You only can go Rondo, or to me, at Oak Hill, Ron Mercer.
Ron Mercer.
Ooh. They was crazy at Oak Hill.
So, yeah. And then I don't know, Stack played well
Stackhouse
there, too.
Stackhouse was good. Stackhouse was good,
Oak That's Hill. Hard. That's like talking about New York. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Too many. Yep.
And I hate getting into that because I forget guys, and I'm like, yeah. You know
so
what I mean?
So many guys.
So many. Yourself. Like, it's just so many.
I put myself like 7 to 8. Yeah. I'm real with myself. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I put myself like 7 to 8.
Come off the bench?
Really?
Yeah, I come off the bench. Yeah, yeah.
I would have thought you'd have put yourself in the top 5.
Nah, because you got to look.
It's just heat.
Two of those teams went undefeated.
Yeah.
At Oak Hill. Yeah. And that was Curtis Staples and Junior Burrow and them. Mm. They went undefeated.
Ooh,
you know what I'm saying? So I'm going like that too. They had a lot of success at Oak Hill.
But you talking about players though. We're talking individually.
Yeah.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
DePaul made Sweet 16 twice, two-time All-American. I know a couple people went to DePaul, but I'm pretty sure it was different from when Quinn Richardson and Bobby Simmons and them was there. What was it like in your time at DePaul?
Man, DePaul was Chicago. Like, straight when I was there, DePaul was big time. Like, you know, I go back and I think about it. Like, we could rival with the Bulls. Like, you know, DePaul was it. I don't think people remember that. But DePaul was, it was a great time, man. Like, that was the moment I realized I can hoop. Like, hoop and get to the next level. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget, I don't know, it might have been the 5th, 6th game we play in Georgetown. And I go in the lane and show it, use the next hand, lay up the big. And, you know, Al McGuire was like, a star is born. And I was like, wow, you know, are you ready to go back and watch the game?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there, and that's when because I never forget Joey Meyer, God bless, just passed. He brought me and my roommate in, Terrence Green. And he was telling us how we could be, you know, like the best combo that's been here. Like he was pumping us up. And I remember walking out of there, but I didn't get it, right? Because I was weird. Like I didn't like look at myself like everybody else looked at me. And so when he said that, I still felt I had work to do. Mm-hmm. But then when I heard Al McGuire say that, then I was like, okay, you know, let's do it. And it was just a great time. We went to a couple Sweet 16s, well, a few. But I'll never forget this. My last, not my last game, but my sophomore year, we played against LSU. This was like the turning point for me. We play LSU, and it's a guy named Daryl Joe. I'll never forget his name. I always wished he played in the NBA because he embarrassed me so much, like defensively. He was like a defensive guy. He was bumping me, bullying me, like made me look real bad, like soft. And I'll never forget that. And from that day, from that game, the next year, I ate weights. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, I'm never letting that happen again, ever. But I wanted to play against him again so bad. Like to this day, like I, you know, that's like the one thing. Because it was on national TV. He walked out of there, talked shit in papers, you know, and all that. But that was that moment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So DePaul was special.
Can you palm a basketball?
I can. I don't know, but I can.
Well, yeah. The reason why I'm asking because I'm thinking you have to with all that ball control. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Well, no, it wasn't that. Like, it's so funny, man. You know, I watched so much was Dr. J. Mm-hmm. Like, I was the biggest. It was Dr. J and Magic. If they played against each other, I was Dr. J. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I'm Magic Johnson. But I always watched. And George Gervin, you know, the flips and all that. And I always had that in my head. And I always wanted to be like that and Magic with the passing and all that. So I kind of just studied those guys. And then, you know, back then, right, you don't have trainers that are telling you what to do, how to move, like what foot to move. You didn't have that. So your imagination. Yeah. So I go out there and now I'm on the basket, just throwing the ball up different angles. Now I get in like pickup games and I'm trying different things, you know? And so what I saw on TV, I used my imagination and I made it mine. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like, you know, people talk about, can you teach all that? I don't know if you can teach all that. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of, you look at Kyrie, I think a lot of that is imagination. You got to have a certain imagination. If you listen to him talk, like that's, it's different. It's another little level. Mm-hmm.
So Kyrie Irving being your godson, what impresses you the most about his game on the court?
I mean, his imagination. Like that's, I always like tell young people that, like you got to watch things and then you got to like, those are the best players, you know? But his skill set, I mean, I don't know if we've ever, you know, I have to go to Isaiah Thomas, but have we ever seen someone that can handle the ball like that? And then it's a little different because like I was a ball handler off of instincts. So I come at you real hard and then I can react. But he's playing with you, the then time. Reacting. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like that's different. You know, so it's kind of street ball and but it's method to the madness. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It ain't just, he's not just doing that. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you listen to him talk, you know his mind is
his
just
IQ
different.
Is crazy.
But, and his mind is just different. His imagination. I mean, if you listen to him talk about anything, his thought process is different. Mm-hmm.
How did the friendship with his father come about?
I mean, known Dedrick since third grade.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like Shit third up. Grade. Yeah, yeah. And we grew up through the Gauchos and all that, you know?
Yeah. So.
Did you ever spend time with like Kyrie as a pro in recent years, like working out on moves and stuff?
No, that's Kyrie, man. Yeah. That's like he was born and embedded with that, you know, through pops and, you know, like he was, yeah, no, that's all Kyrie.
So, maybe I'm saying that because he got so much of you in his game and you being his godfather, it's hard not to see.
Well, you
know
see
what I'm
it.
Saying?
You can't. I mean, there's inspiration. It's like I talk about Tiny and all that. Like you get a chance to see, to be able to know someone who's done what you're trying to do. And there's video, you know what I mean? So like there's that. Yeah. I think people forget about that part of it.
Right.
Right. You don't actually have to be there right, to inspire or to help somebody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? When I was coaching in college with you know, the D Rose and the John Walls, it wasn't about being on the court. You know, it was like the conversations or what they saw. Like, so it ain't always, you know what I mean?
What did you see? I mean, speaking of those two, what did you see out of those two at that young college age that you knew it at that time
when
you
different. Got them? Like, you know, like people, I don't know, I think people take too much credit for people's success. You know what I mean? Like, they walked in there like that.
It was already.
That's why, you know what I mean? They walk, like, you don't, they, you know, sometimes we, oh, I did this and that. They walked in like that. A lot of times it's the conversation, right? It's helping them get from that point to the next point. How do you get out of college, right? And I remember telling them, like, this will be the hardest part of your basketball life. Because, you know, you got Cal, somebody who's on you, but you're not going to get that in the league. But if you can deal with that now, you know what I mean? So it's more conversation, getting them from point A to point B. Like, D. Rose, nobody teach him that, at least from college. John Wall, ain't nobody teach him that. Tyreek Evans, you know, like, that's...
Tyreek Evans is cold. I just seen someone the other day. I don't know how he washed out the league. He was cold and cold. Big and strong, too. Cold. He came and got Rookie of the Year and just... Yeah. Maybe it was being in Sacramento, washed him out. The Euro step. You remember urine in the 90s and getting called for travel. They wasn't really ready for it yet.
Pay attention, audience.
Well, we Euro stepped and did it. I don't even think it's, I mean, I got a video of that, of us Euro stepping, mm-hmm. Sign of the times, man. It's just errors. Like, people don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, after, like, in about 5-10 years, for y'all probably 15-20 years, they're gonna forget about all this. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't, you know. Mm-hmm.
They don't care about history no more.
Because they don't think like that. Like, we watched, I knew all the old players. I knew what they did, you know, the Pete Maraviches, all of them. Like, I knew. Mm-hmm. But they don't, it's what's going on now. Mm-hmm. And they put whoever's doing what they're doing now. But if you go back, all this stuff, you'll see it.
The game was a lot different when you first came in the game with the hand checks and the freedom of, or the lack of freedom of movement. What do you feel like you could have done with the rules where they allowed kind of freedom of movement, especially with how creative you were?
I always talk about that. The game is wide open. You can't touch anyone. So me being an aggressive driver, like, I'm going to run up your chest and I'm going to
shoot 12 free throws a game.
But I'm going to make baskets with the contact because that's what I've grown to be. And then with the IQ, if I get in the middle, I'm going to make the right reads, you know? And we talk about three-point shooting. You work on that. And you don't have to always be that. Everybody thinks you have to be that. But you can make an impact. Ja Morant's not a super three-point shooter, right? So you can make an impact. You know, IQ, knowing how to run a team, score time, you know, mm-hmm. we forgot about all right. that. But I just think my skill set of just IQ and the fact that I'm going to penetrate, like, I'm getting by you. Regardless. And once I get, I'm getting by you. So once I get by you, I have the ability to make that right play.
Yeah, makes you even more dangerous.
19th pick in 88, drafted to the Knicks. Danny Manning, Rick Smith, Mitch Richmond, Dan Marley, my guy. That was a nice class. Talk about that year.
Yeah, it's a decent class. I got drafted by the Knicks.
Home team,
but I wasn't excited. Yeah. And I didn't know, like, I was told I was going to go somewhere between 7 and 15. And the Seattle Supersonics told my agent that if I was at 15, they were taking me. So, you know, I was nervous because my college coach, Joey Meyer, called me and told me I was dropping in draft. So, I think it was Boston and the Lakers. They always had the last two picks. So one of them called them. And so I'm like nervous because, you know, you get to that point, you could slip to the second round. I never expected the Knicks to draft me. And then they drafted, they had Mark from the prior year. So I'm thinking, I'm looking at the board. And I'm like, I'm going late. So when they picked me, I was surprised. And I got booed. Like, in New York, which is crazy to me.
Not to cut you off, did Mark say he was mad they drafted him? We had Mark on the show, did he? Didn't he say he was he?
Yeah, he didn't
mad.
Like that.
Yeah, he wasn't fucking with it.
He wouldn't say that back then. Yeah. Mark is my guy. I wouldn't
right.
be like that.
Right,
you
right.
You know what I mean? I'm a rookie.
And he
you
had
go
just
draft.
Won Rookie of the Year too, didn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Dang.
But I wish it was too early for that time. Like, they would put me and Mark in the game. Yeah. They would put us in the game at times, and we would turn the guard out, you know? But at that time, two-point guards, they weren't doing that. They weren't ready for that. I wish we could have done that more because we would have been really good. But that was a clash. Like, that was hard, right? And me and Mark always held respect for each other. And Mark could tell you this. I tried to fight Mark one day in practice. We talk about it. We laugh about it all the time. Like, I was mad one day. I just was frustrated. And every time he tried to come off the ball screen, I was just hitting him. Like, I just was, you know. But we talk about it all the time. But Mark is my guy. I got utmost respect for him. And what he did was he was professional. Yeah. And I struggled with that, right? So that was kind of the difference, you know what I mean? But I like Mark, the way he carried himself. You know, Mark has the ability to make everyone think they're better than they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah, look like that.
Yeah, and you see what he did as a coach with Golden State, but he also did that as a player. Mm-hmm. So I got, like, the utmost for my guy.
Yeah. Didn't the Knicks, like, try, like, two-point guards again before that with, like, Tony Archibald? Who was Fire and Ice?
No, you talking about Frazier and Pearl, Earl Monroe? Pearl. So they didn't try.
They did.
That was it. That was it. Yeah, they won a championship. Like, that was the deal.
That one worked. Yeah. So, but did they keep trying to repeat that, like, year?
No, they didn't. They wouldn't. They didn't. No, that was it. Like, that was a, you know, like, an outlier. That was just different.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Clyde was about 6'4".
I think
he was somewhere around there, which makes it a little different. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Because it's not too small guards. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Made it a little different.
It's a legit point guard and shooting guard.
Yeah, it made it a little different. Yeah.
What was the state of the league when you arrived? MJ was becoming a star. Commercial flights, people smoking Newports on the plane while y'all flying.
No, you date me too much. I ain't gonna let you do that. You know what though?
They used to have that little flip ashtray.
You know what? You might be right. Yeah. Might have been some residue in that. You might be right. Stat, my bad.
Said some residue.
There might be some residue in that.
Yeah,
you know why?
Some
you might
residue.
Be right.
Yeah, look, let me say why I think it's going on, OG. When we was flying in Indiana to road games, Donnie Walsh was in the back of the plane.
Yes. All right,
the whole team on the plane, squares in the air.
I'll take that back. You might be right. Now, I'm going to tell you why you're right. So when I first got in the league, you know, there was beers in the locker room. So we would grab a six-pack and go in the shower after the game. You know what I mean?
Before you go on the plane.
Or, you know, if it's after game, if we're in New York, go six pack and go out.
Yeah.
You know, and I think Doug West had a car accident.
And they shut all that down.
Or a DUI or something.
Yeah.
And then they shut that down, which rightfully
smart.
So.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the plane and everything at that time. You're right. Yeah, cigarettes.
Because I know we got a little of that residue, so I know.
Yeah.
Remember they had the little flip thing on the arm. You could flip the little. I was like, this is a can you imagine smoking weed on this thing?
Yeah. I don't know about that. I ain't gonna take that one, man.
Not me.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Hip-hop. Your name's been mentioned in a lot of different songs. I'm not singing you, read you a couple lyrics. Guaranteed to make a jump like Rod Strickland. I'm not a rapper, bro. Wu-Tang, straight to the hole like Rod Strickland. It was taking a toll. DMX, rest in peace. My man Kelly Moon from Garvin, Rod Strickland, Wu-Tang. And the plot is thickening on a point like Rod Strickland, Onyx. I mean, as a hooper, it's the ultimate, you know. They mirror each other. Hooping and music mirror each other. So what was it like when you started getting shout-outs?
It's crazy.
Some of these rappers.
It's like, if you really go look at it, it's a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was just a few.
It's a lot. And when I understood that, I was like, wow. Like, that's big time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ultimate one is, you know, the Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
Like, ending the song, you know, that's forever. And that's a big time song. So definitely, like, honored, blessed, and all that to, you know, the Wu-Tang. And then one of the greatest songs, like, with your name.
Are you related to the street baller Strickland?
No, John Strickland, God bless. He was nice. He was funny as I don't know what, too. But nah.
He was nice.
Yes, he was. IQ.
Yeah, exactly.
traded from New York to San Antonio 2 years in. I had my own experience, but I know it was different. What was your experience like in San Antonio with David Robinson and Larry Brown?
How can I say that? Because I got to take a lot of heat on that. I mean, they're different, you know. Dave and Sean were kind of the upstanding individuals, and I probably was the wild child, you know.
I know that very well.
Yeah. But, like, we had a really good team. We were off to a really good start. And then I got into an incident and broke my hand, and that kind of was the downfall. Mm-hmm. You know, I think everything was kind of going downhill from there. But I enjoyed, you know, like, again, there's things if you can go back, right? Like, I could have made more of that situation and opportunity, but I guess just wasn't mature enough for that. But playing with Dave Robinson was ridiculous,
yep.
Right? Because you guard whoever, if they get by you, they got a problem,
mm-hmm.
You know? So, and then we were fast-paced, getting the ball up and down. So it was, as a basketball on the court, it was great. But, you know, it got sour quickly.
Yeah.
Bob Bass was there. He couldn't stand me. I couldn't stand him. And, you know, things just went the other way.
You reflect on that real quick, Jack, before we got on camera and then obviously now, and obviously if you could change things, when did you kind of look in the mirror and realize that some of the issues were because of you? Was it post-career, during career,
definitely
dark time?
Post-career.
Post-career?
Definitely post-career. Because I was a hooper, right? And I always knew I can get on the court and hoop. So sometimes that was like an excuse or a scapegoat, and that kind of hurt me. Because whatever happened on the outside, I always felt I was good enough that as soon as I get on the court, I'm going to shut y'all up, you know? And that was like a gift and a curse. And then I always tell people, like, your habits from when you're young to old, like, they carry with you, right? So I was one of those guys, like, when we were playing as youngsters, my friends had to come get me out the apartment to come to the game, or I was oversleeping, or, you know, I was in high school, I was late, right? I was Truman High School, and, you know, I'll say this now, like, I go to school at 12 in the afternoon. You know what I mean?
Only like, on game days.
I just had these super right. bad habits, right?
Right?
So people think once you get some money or you become a pro, like, you're supposed to automatically learn how
it
to be professional.
Those.
I didn't know how to be professional, but I knew how to hoop. And so that hurt my career. It, you know, even, I mean, I think I could have been a 3-, 4-, 5-time All-Star. But I think because of those habits and the way people looked at me, coaches, the league, like, that hampered. Like, we talked about, I made All-NBA second team, led the league in assists. So that means you're telling me I was top 10 in the league, but I wasn't an All-Star. So, but that, you know, it's like looking back and understanding, like, I feel I should have been that, but I feel I could have been that if I would have done it like I should have done it. Mm-hmm. So that's the survivor's remorse, mm-hmm. like we talk right. about.
San Antonio was great for me. I played with David Robinson's last year. So I can imagine what you've seen at a young Dave. I played with him the last year, and he still was able to help us win the championship. So that was experience for me, but I understand the culture shock of it. I was the same guy you was.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to be a professional.
Yeah.
Around a whole bunch of people that's doing stuff right instead of, and I want to do it my way.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, but I can say I learned how to be a professional there. Mm-hmm. If I didn't have those 2 years in San Antonio, I don't think I would have lasted 14 years.
Right.
Yeah. Game 7 turnover for Portland. Tie game. In overtime, he tried to go behind the head.
Ooh. They got him rubbing the shit. You see, he's like, God damn it.
That changed my whole posture, right?
Take us back to that moment.
Wow. That moment was crazy. Because it, like, if I break it down, like, we could have beat them, and then we would have been playing the Suns, I think it was, and we were kind of dominating the Suns that year. You know, KJ was a beast, but again, you had David Robinson back there. So that was a big-time play. And it was getting caught up in the moment, right? In New York. Like, you know, I was one of them, and I just got caught up, you know? And I knew this because I got – you know, they killed me about that. But then there's some people who tried to give me grace, and I couldn't even take the grace because I'm like, that's on me. Because I'm point guard. If you don't get the ball to the man, that's on you. Like, I've always believed that. And I know Sean Elliott likes to veer out for the shot.
Yeah.
Right? But I also know he can go in. But I know he likes to do that. So I get the ball, and I remember spinning or turning and seeing him. And, you know, my instincts is you go to the basket. But that wasn't the moment to turn your back and make a play. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So as soon as it left my hand, it felt awkward.
Ah.
Right? So the bad part was, the bad part about it was they stole it. They go down, and I made a foul, a breakaway, and my last foul. So they get shots, the ball, and I'm out the game. I can't even redeem myself. And that was the worst. Well, I'm going to tell you, the walk from fouling out to the bench, right, looking at everybody, and then from the locker room to the plane, going past everybody, and then from the plane, when it landed to the car, it was the longest walks ever.
Lonely as a motherfucker.
You know how you can feel everybody, like you looking at everybody, and like, it's like they're talking in your head, and they're looking at you like, you idiot, are you dummy? Like, you can almost
see it in there. That's how Dak Prescott felt.
You know? No, for real. That's like, that's indeed what I felt. But it was a bad play. Like, it was a hard, I remember Isaiah Magic, and it was killing me about it. And this is a lesson for, like, young people. Like, I ate that because it came from Magic and Isaiah.
Yeah, got to.
So what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Drazen Petrovic.
Yeah.
Nice. Everybody know he was nice. Y'all had a little on-the-court situation where you gave him a forearm shiver. That's what they want to say it now. Can you explain what happened? Actually happened that day?
I was hot.
Like, he was frying you?
No, because I wasn't guarding him, but he was doing little stuff. You know, like he was talking, but then, you know, that little bumps.
Yeah.
And I just was like one bump too many. And
one too many.
No, because I think he scored or whatever. But, I mean, if you watch the play, he blatantly just, you know,
yeah,
bumped me. And that whole time after that going down court, I had nothing on my mind. Like, I'm getting him.
Spin the block.
It was nothing else. I was going straight. You could say I went straight to him, you know? And, you know, back then, that's how it was.
Yeah, it was cool.
And back then, though, it was different, though, because you had to always, like, those little things, if you didn't take care of them, you were in trouble.
Yeah.
Right? That was just the league back then, yeah, right? I mean, me and Isaiah one time was on the floor, and, you know, me and Stockton, you know, Back in the day, like, you had to, you couldn't let that happen. Like, those were like little things that give other people the edge, right? If they know you can do that, like, more than now,
mm-hmm,
couldn't let it, like, it just.
And people say that about Chris Paul, how he was physical and dirty. All the point guards, John Stockton, all the point guards was like that, physical, and played like that, tried to get that edge.
And I used to say dirty, but I don't even now that I'm, like, Stockton was doing what he needed to do.
You have to be great.
To have an edge. Like, even Isaiah, you know, and I know he doesn't like to take the bad boy image, but Isaiah was tough.
Yeah.
No joke. And fight ready, you know, and you had to be ready to, you had to match that.
Yeah.
Or that was their advantage. Like, that's, like, I look at, like, Isaiah and I had him on, I was doing a podcast at one time, and I was talking to him, and, like, I was like, embrace the bad boy image, right? Mm-hmm. Because y'all were able to intimidate people. That ain't got nothing to do with y'all. That's them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they let you do that, like, okay, fine. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yep. Who were some of the matchups you enjoyed during your run?
I don't know about enjoy, but like.
I don't know about enjoy.
Yeah, like, you know. You
had, it was some of your tough ones, yeah.
Ooh.
Tim Hardaway, Texas, you had KJ, you had GP, you had Stockton. You know, you had guys like Nick Van Exel who can embarrass you. You had Mahmoud. Like, there's so many. I hate to, like you know, Sam could get hot. You know, Mark is so interesting because Mark and Stockton could be the dudes that had like 10 and 10 and dominate you and you don't even know it. You know what I mean? I know I'm missing some guys, but those are, you know, then you had the younger guys coming in like the AIs and the Steps and all of them, but they kind of on that other side of it. But it was a lot. It was a lot of guys.
So after San Antonio, you head to Portland. Some turnover there. What was the Pacific Northwest like for you?
It was good. I enjoyed it. But I think I came in on the back end of, you know, that championship run. I came in that next year. And, like, we had a hell of a lineup to start the season. I was coming off the bench. They signed me and told me, you know, I was coming off the bench. So, but off the bench, it was me, Mario Eli, Mark Bryant, and I want to say Cliff Robinson. And they had their regular starting five.
So who was the starting five at that time?
So it was TP, Clyde, Jerome Kersey, Duckworth. I might be missing somebody.
Buck Williams.
There you go. Yeah. How can I forget Buck? Yeah. I'm tripping. My bad, Buck. So that was a hell of a nine. And then Clyde got hurt early. Because I think we started out like 6-0 or something like that. And Clyde got hurt. And that just changed the dynamic, you know, Clyde Drexler. And so then Clyde left. He went to Houston. But I enjoyed Portland, you know. I enjoyed Portland. We made the playoffs, didn't really go that far. But I enjoyed it.
How good was Clyde Drexler?
Ridiculous. With one hand.
Didn't go strong left right at all. Yeah. Went right the whole game.
Yeah, but I think they underestimated his IQ, you know, his passing. And even because he was a great post-up guard too, just sealing guys and angles. And he was like, I think as great as he was, I don't think people really understand his IQ.
I liked Clyde a lot. Washington Wizards with the young C. Webb and Juwan Howard. What was that like?
Man, to get there with those young guys, C.
So
Webb.
Not to cut you off, what year in your career was that for you?
I think that was like 97. So what, my ninth year or something like that?
So you seasoned by this time.
Right, was it 97? Right, yeah. C. Webb and Juwan Howard is like super energy. I mean, I'll never forget we played against Steph and KG. That was the craziest, like that environment, like the tip off, you could feel the energy, tension. Yeah. You know, Steph ready to come at me, KG ready to go. C-Webb was incredible. Like, I don't think he gets enough credit, right? Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, it's weird. I don't know why, but like, you don't hear much about C-Webb, but C-Webb was special. I mean, like special. Mm-hmm. You know, we had C-Webb, but he averaged 20, 10.
5, 6.
You know, steals, blocks. Like, he did everything.
Passed the ball too, man.
Yeah, and it became noticeable when we got rid of him or when they traded him, right? Because now, you know, you done cut off the head. You know, we run ball screens, throw the ball anywhere.
Catch that thing, yeah.
You know, and then he had the growl and he just had the intensity and, you know, Jay Howard the same way. But we didn't stick together long enough. Wes Unseld was the GM, a little old school. Couldn't really understand the mishaps or what have you. You know, it's funny now because I look at the league now. And it's more of a players' league now.
Oh, absolutely. Right?
So back then, it was like rule with the strong hand.
Yeah,
and really didn't understand how to maneuver with younger generation, younger guys. But the DC one is like, I wish we could have stayed together longer.
That was young. Was Ben Wallace there yet, or he came?
Ben Wallace was there. Ben Wallace was a rookie. Uh-huh. So Ben Wallace walks in the gym. We were practicing at Bowie State. That's where we practiced at when I first got to the Wizards or the Bullets. Mm-hmm.
So it was damn sure some residue and
if y'all were practicing this.
We were practicing at Bowie State. So it was funny. It was like the preseason and we just playing pickup. And I don't know all the dynamics, how he got there, whatever. But I just remember being in the gym and you know, I think I'm the layup king. I don't think no one's blocking my shot.
I still feel like that. You are the layup king.
But I'm in there and this dude keeps blocking my shot. And I'm like, who is he? And it was Ben Wallace. And the funny thing is, throughout my career, like he used to do that to me. Like when he was with the Pistons. It's like he timed me, you know? Yeah. But So Ben was ridiculous. And Ben was no nonsense. Mm. Don't mess with Ben.
Did he talk?
Y'all saw that.
Yeah, well, I saw it.
Yeah.
I saw
and
it.
That's Ben.
Up close and personal.
Care. Yes.
And no, he gets big. He gets bigger by the second.
He's the coolest dude ever.
Yes.
But don't take him there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the driving to work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think. He's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thoughts recently, and it warmed my heart to see the Fab Five back together.
Man.
How important is that for the culture, for basketball, for Michigan to stop bullshitting? Like, what did you think when you saw that?
Nah, I love it. I love it because I know those guys.
Right.
You know what I mean? So to have them all back together, like, it's so interesting because, you know, you look at the college, you look at how it is now, and you just look back and you say, like, for them to go through that, like, you know.
And
you know,
the freedom is now, the freedom now.
Yeah.
And the NILs now.
And I always say, like, the young guys always get the raw end of the stick, right? But it's always the adults. Like, if you look back at any of that, who started that? Where did that come from? You know? And, man, that's greatness. How do you, like, ban greatness for basically what adults did?
Not understanding.
How did banner not up?
Like, yeah.
That's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah. I mean, they changed. I mean, now we talk about culture again.
Right.
That's culture. Strong like, they culture. Changed. They had a whole, like, revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
that don't happen if Javon not coach.
Yeah, right.
They could have been brought them back. Okay. That don't happen if Juwan's not coached at the time. Sure. You know what I'm
Absolutely
saying?
Absolutely not.
You know who fostered a lot of that shit was Harbaugh.
Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
That's dope.
Was he? He the one who went to Webb and was like, I'm going to get you back on this campus. Yeah. You got to come through the football. Yeah.
Because he was at the games.
Yep.
Yeah. No, yeah. I love seeing that because Jay Howard and, you know, Webb.
Jimmy and Ray all Jimmy together, man. Ray, my guys. Man,
they deserve that.
Right. I came out with all them guys. Yeah, we came out with all them guys.
Oh, they deserve that 97. More.
Okay. 97.
That and then some. You're right.
Yeah. 97. Yeah.
Yeah. Should have a statue outside the basketball.
All five of them. Yeah, yes, exactly.
Iconic photo when they all in there.
No, they definitely got to honor them.
All of, when all of them had the ball heads.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Swept by the 90s, in 97 by the 69 win Bulls. What was Mike like in his focus in that team at that time?
Mike is Mike.
Like, plain and simple.
Mike is Mike. I remember, I don't know if he gave us a 50 piece, I think, or maybe 40 something. And I never forget Cal Bocchini being like distraught. And he walked in another room like after the game. I was like, man, get out of there, man. Come on in here, man. We good. But you know, Mike is Mike. Mike is Mike. Mike was able to dominate when he needed to and how he wanted to. And, you know, Mike was a mismatch. We know that.
We know that.
A problem.
It was a mismatch. And then you had the great Scottie Pippen, who probably doesn't get enough credit as well.
Right.
And then even Ron Harper. Because you think about
tough. He was a killer before he
went to the Chicago. Well, no,
before when Ron Harper was in Cleveland. Man, I don't know if people need to go watch.
Man. Did he lead the league in steals or something like that?
He might have, but I'm going to tell you this.
25 points
he would have never gotten injured. He would have rocked
knee.
MJ.
Knee, yep.
Like, I'm just telling you, Hart was a bad boy.
Yeah, and even with the Clippers, you know? He was tough.
Yeah. But just think about those three as defenders, you know, as a 6'3 guard, like, you know, because all they would do is start gapping you, right? No, I'm not a jump shooter. Mm-hmm. So now they're gapping you. So I had to try to get them in transition, you know? So, yeah, they were great.
So MJ was really like that on D.
Oh, definitely. And they let him
get away with it, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the game.
They're not calling hand slaps. No.
But as a defender, no doubt about
it. He was
a great defender. Absolutely.
Because you see a lot of superstars that don't take their pride on defense. You know what I'm saying?
He definitely, him, Pippen, and Hart. That's what I say. If you got those three on the perimeter, that's tough.
6'6", 6'6", 6'8".
That's tough.
Final years, a lot of stops. Portland, Miami, Minnesota, Orlando, Toronto. He played with T-Mac, KG, Shee.
No, those are like shit. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Any bright spots in any of those stops?
No, I enjoyed them all, you know, but it was just so, as I talked about, like if you put my numbers in the 90s, right? I think I would put him with all the point guards, whether it's a little low or whatever. But it's 17, almost 9, 4 rebounds, almost 2 steals. But those other years kind of brought everything down. So that's why I look at those years, right? And we talked off camera. The unprofessionalism led up to those last 5 years. You know what I mean? Because now the last 5 years, if you look at it, I had to sit out and wait for teams to like lose enough to say, all right, let's go get Rod, you know? So there was no plan for me, right? I'm a fill-in. So now the minutes go down and, you know, everything. So when I look at those 5 years, obviously great, like all those organizations were great. But when I look at it, like those were the years that kind of like messed up the numbers. you know what I mean?
Yeah, I kind of think like basically, back then, if I'd have said today's decisions going to affect the future life, you know what I'm saying? If I'd have thought about that then, I would have made the decision. I probably would have played in the All-Star too. So I see what you're saying. Those mistakes you made at the beginning of the year, thinking of that, it affected at the end.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because if I was, professional, like I may have stayed with other teams, right?
Yeah.
So when you're with the other teams, you already got a role.
Right.
You know? But now you flip-flopping the teams, like you don't have a role. You're just there to really fill in.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, now you're playing 15 minutes. And, you know, so you go from averaging, your career averages being 16.8 to 13,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then it looks different. And I don't think people can get the real feel of what you did, mm-hmm. right? Because they're going by the end numbers. But if you, like I said, if you take those 5 years out and you go, even if you want to go to 12, the first 12, but I know if you go to 90s, for the 10 years and you stack them up to whoever, they're gonna be somewhere in the picture.
Mm-hmm. They definitely stand on their own. So 17-year career, 13 years sober, which to me is just as impressive as that long run. You're on the record saying—
How you know that?
Huh? You know, you're on the record saying if you didn't drink, you felt like you had an opportunity to be a Hall of Famer. Can you explain what that is like? Because we all have vices, you know what I mean? He and I had our vice, and it was smoking, and, you know, every day we did it, we was, you know, on the brink of possibly getting kicked out, and now it's allowed. So what, you know, take us back through that mindset and you know, pulling yourself out of that darkness.
Like honestly, like, and I talk about the professional part, you know, being late or just that attitude. And then, you know, obviously drinking and hanging out and all that, like your decision making becomes bad, right? So it ain't even just on the court. You know, when I reflect back, you know, my family, my kids, friendships, like everything, you know. And then as a professional, you know, because what you don't really understand is that as you're drinking and you're hanging out and you're having a ball, like, you're kind of, you're putting together a map for people. Like, you kind of, how can I say it? What's the word I want to use? Well, for the lack of, like, a word right now, you're showing people who you are, right? Or you're putting this image in the people's minds that you don't even understand later years, they're going to hold that against you. And you don't understand that, right? So the funny thing about, like, me stop drinking, what I realized, and John Lucas told me this. He said, you're going to have, he said three things. I can only remember two. But he said, you're going to have people who don't want you to change, right? Because they're so used to having fun with you. And then you're going to have people who are never going to accept or let you change. And the second one, the latter one, I found out the hard way. Right? Because you know how you can be around people and you can think they're with you or they're your people. But then when it's time to put you in situations to kind of put you in power or put you in position, they'll minimize you. And they'll minimize you because they think this is who you are. So you can't be trusted or they don't value you or whatever. Might be your friend, might even love you. But they feel like, you know, and the crazy part about that, I had to get away from them to get to where I'm at now. So y'all know Chrissy Chin, right? Best thing, mm-hmm. Best person, amazing. Best, my family. But she single-handedly grabbed me and helped me get to where I'm at now.
That sounds just like her.
Right? And she valued me. And she put me around people because she knew who I really was,
yeah.
Right? Where they think I'm the rod or whatever they think mm-hmm. I am, she knew who I was. And she knew I had more up here than you think.
Mm-hmm.
So she put me in front of people and helped me understand how to deal with people, right? Because I'm one of those, like, I'm one of those non-trusting people. Like, I don't, you know, I think everybody has an agenda sometimes, right? There's phoniness, right? And then when I feel that, I can't. But I had to learn how to get out of that.
Get out your own way.
Because you get out your own way.
How hard was it? Because it's something he and I had to do post-career to almost reinvent yourself. Like you said, you got pulled out of an area where they expected you to, you know, your reputation, whether earned, you know, earned is, you know, good or bad, it's earned. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So to be able to reinvent yourself in a new space, was that tough? Was it gratifying? Because I found it gratifying when people would look at me and they hear me talk or they're like, oh, I didn't know that was,
yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. So I had to humble myself, right? And I had to understand. Well, the first thing I had to realize was it wasn't them. It was me, right? I had to get out of that, you know, because I want to be mad at whoever, and I really shouldn't be mad because whatever happened, I exposed that to them. So once I got past that, and then again, you know, Krissa believing in me and understanding that I'm probably smarter or, you know, not like they think I am and to put me around people so that they can see me. But then I had to open up. I'll never forget, I was on NBA TV with Dennis Scott and we were doing it. And before the broadcast started, I was like, man, I'm nervous. Like, I'm, you know, I got, cause I get anxieties. Like, I've just been like that all my life, you know, in front of people and all that. I've gotten better, but I've dealt with that forever. And I told him that, and he said, man, I'm glad you told me that. He said, that says it all. He actually said, you need to tell people that, because that tells who you are. Because he said, you the guy who come in the room and go in the corner, you know? And I had to realize that too. Like, I'm being me, but I don't know what kind of energy I'm giving off to everyone else. So when I walk in a room and I'm like, they may think I'm standoffish, but I just might be to myself, right? And there's no disrespect or anything. And I had to learn that too, right? And I had to, that was a big part. But still being myself, because I don't like who I don't like and I don't want to be around. I'm one of them, like, I feel like, you know, that we always talk about, like, and I get people like, you got to be professional, you know, so shake his hand, you know, if you don't, even if you don't like him. But I'm one of them that, no, I think it's good that if I don't like you, let's just walk past each other. Fuck, like, let's not
shit.
Play
yeah,
that game.
No,
you know
no
what I mean?
For the fake shit.
So I'm going to tell you a funny story. I don't know if it's funny, but me telling you who I am, I never forget, I'm with Team Ignite and we're at the Golden State Warriors Arena with the G League team. We
playing in Santa Cruz?
No, we're at their arena. Oh. We're actually playing in their arena
the
for
real
one game.
Oh, okay.
Right? It was like our last game. What's the Golden State owner name?
Goober? Lakem.
Lakem.
So I'll never forget this. Him and what's my guy from Duke?
Mike Dunleavy.
They're walking, right? And this is against probably what I normally do, but they walk in, we're in the stadium, but I'm in their stadium. So we're walking past and I feel like it's almost like I say hello. So I never forget shaking Joe Lake. You know, how you doing? I'm Rod Strickland. Man, dude grabbed my hand and almost moved it away and was like, I know who you are. I said, God damn, that's why I don't tell you. That's why, you know what I mean? But I never forget that.
On just some bad energy?
Some bad energy.
Really?
You know, and you know, like, I'm saying, like,
if you only knew, right? Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, I'm telling you, yeah, I know who you are, and walk away.
Past you?
I'm like, that. Was you a GM or something in one of them teams? But it was just the craziest energy. And, you know, that's why I
But then it
kind of,
yeah, it really kind of, see, it that's why I don't do this
that's
shit.
That's wild. You know?
I might be smacking
We have these, I'm yeah. shit, this nigga be called, taking me off the cliff a whole bunch of times. All these motherfuckers. I'll be ready to.
But it was the craziest thing. Like, it was the craziest shit. Thing. And I'm like, you know, like, man to man, if you was like, wow, that's right. Interesting.
Nah, that is crazy.
Who is Rod outside of coaching and basketball? Because we've talked about a lot of basketball.
Cool
Who are
breeze.
You outside?
Yeah, man. Like, I'm simple, man. I try to stay in my lane, stay out the way. You know, I got my guys. I kind of stick to I stick to myself. You know, I try to, you know, as far as this coaching, I'm trying to become the best coach I can be, trying to improve this program. But then outside of that, man, I'm probably just walking my lane. Like, I don't even know it's not much to it. You know, I think I've done so much in the past. Like, I'm real chill. I'm particular where I'm at, the places I'm in. Because again, just like what I just told you, like, I never want to be in an environment that, yeah, like, I'm not really welcoming. Like, I want to be in spaces that, you know, people kind of applaud you, appreciate you, rather than you just there to be there. You know, I even social media, I tried to dib and dab with that, but that's a rough one for me.
That shit's crazy. Yeah, they be saying, wow, they be talking
it's
wild
just
out
too
there.
Much.
Give you a credit, you take on the role as being an OG sometimes, because there's been some conversation that you reach out to me that you didn't help me with that we didn't have. So, you know, whatever role you play in life is beneficial to a lot of people.
No, I appreciate that.
But you also know it's people who've been through shit and experienced and looked in that mirror and understand their flaws in the past and not still blaming everyone else. To me, not to pat us on it, but we have the best advice because we've been there at the highest level and we know we fucked money off and we know we fucked situations off and did a lot of shit. But now it's just like when people look at the way I talk to my sons or coach the kids, because those are like my family, and they're just like, wow. It's like, not don't do this because I did it. You know what I mean? That I did this, you don't have to do it. So just to be able to come back and give, but it's first you got to be able to look at yourself in the mirror and see your soul and realize like, yo, I had a lot of my, not to harp on it, you know, but to a point, like I had a lot to do with this situation or that situation. Yeah, it was fucked
up, definitely.
But I had a lot to do with it. So to be able to see your fault, move past it, forgive yourself, and then try to, you know, give your blessings to the next generation.
But that's your superpowers. I tell people like that's your superpower. Like, cause everybody can't do it.
Right.
Everybody can't talk and have that conversation and be authentic with it. You know, my son, my oldest son, he's with me now. And I tell him, cause he had some bad experiences in college with some coaches and the way they dealt with him, the way they treated him. And I told him, man, like that's your superpower. Like talk about it. I mean, you put him on blast. Like talk about it, right? Because that'll relieve you. And also, but you give, you'd be surprised how many people have gone through that.
Same, similar
right?
Things.
One thing I've learned just from experience is that like you can stand in front of 7, 8, 10, 12 people and they're judging you and they got so much baggage. So like I'm always, you looking at me, I'm staring at you,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I know you ain't perfect.
Right.
Right, so I'm cool with my flaws.
Mm-hmm.
I know what they are and I've worked on it and I'm growing and still growing. So when I walk in front of people, like, man, it is what it is. You know, keep it over there, you know what I'm saying? But I understand that. And even when, you know, we talk about social media or people, like we got this thing where we always judging the person that's being talked about. But a lot of times I'm judging the person who's talking.
It says a lot about you.
Yeah, because I'm trying to figure out why you're talking.
What's your angle? What's your point?
Why you saying that?
Right.
Right? When you're blurting certain things out, you know, sometimes that's an insecurity or that's some stuff going on with you. So that's why I don't receive all that energy, you know? Because it's like, you know, even like listening to Sebastian, right? Instead of me like all on him, no, I get it. But that ain't about me.
Right.
So you don't even have to name me.
Yeah.
Because that ain't really about me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
That's your journey.
Yeah.
You got to figure that out. Mm-hmm. You know?
With the journey you've been on as a young man and a player and a coach and in management, can you see now when you're in management or coaching outside shit affecting people on the court? Can you see it? Can you feel it?
Oh, it definitely happens. It definitely happens. But so it's crazy. I think my superpowers was it didn't affect me on the court.
Oh, yeah. You didn't allow it to affect you.
It didn't
yeah.
affect me. Once I got on the court, that was like everything is done.
Get away.
Like I used to go back, I'll get in trouble. And my home crowd is booing me, like when I come in the game. But my mind was never like I got nervous or shook on that. I was always like, I'm going to do something.
That's your release.
And
they'll forget about it.
You know, mm-hmm. So that was I got that, but I don't know if that was great for me.
Yeah, to but be able to compartmentalize shit.
Yeah, it can definitely affect you. But I'm good at compartmentalizing.
No, but I'm saying, as someone older now who's been through it, have you had to pull people like younger G Leaguers to the side? Like, hey, what's going on? You good? How's home? How's this?
Definitely.
You
know? Oh no, that's definitely definitely absolutely has happened a lot, and it definitely affects, especially the young people, especially now. So you think about it, when we came out, like people just talked around the city, whatever, you didn't hear it.
No.
You know, every now and then someone will confront you and then you'll say something, but you didn't, you know, you get a newspaper article or two. But now when you're going through stuff, like the whole world is on you.
Comment is looking for you. You used to have to look for it. Now it's looking for you.
The whole world is on you. Mm-hmm. Like that's why I say the social media is tough, because once you get involved in it and you put yourself out there, then you have to take everyone's energy. Mm-hmm. Like I'm a blocker. Like as soon as I feel something, I don't like something, I'm blocking.
I'm going to cuss you out first, then block you.
So I'm gonna bullshit with you a couple of days and joke on you and tell you about your life a couple of days, then block you.
Make you feel stupid, then block you.
I'm gonna spend some time with you though.
That's a lot.
You said you're gonna spend some time.
State of the point guard. I feel like the days of true point guarding, whether, you know, making your team better is how you make yourself better. I kind of feel like, you know, we're in a straight scoring point guard mode. I mean, I think, you know, there's a handful of guys that still, you know, throw them passes around. CP's kind of a last of a dying breed. But what are your thoughts on just the point guard and how it's, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it evolved or just maybe changed.
It's changed. It's changed. And I think like Rondo and CP were the last of that. But it's just changed. The game has changed, right? Everybody's shooting three-pointers. So you have to be a you know, you can't, man, I don't even know if you can get a look if you can't shoot a three. So
I mean, that's not even your point guard, but that's across the board.
That's
now.
Across the board.
Yeah.
But even as a guard, everybody's looking at shooting percentages. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's dominating, you know, the Kyries, the Stephs. You know, even Ja Morant to me is a PG, but he's still mm-hmm. a scorer, mm-hmm. you know. But the game changes. Like, it'll circle back. Like, I even think, like, eventually the bigs
will come back.
I think, mm-hmm. you know, this game evolves.
It's a copycat league. So if Denver wins a couple championships, yes. you got to find someone to put the big front line. Yes. Now you got to go back to big front yes. lines.
And I miss the days of where different teams did different things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, now everything is just cookie cutter.
You can see it in your sleep. Yeah,
it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. You got a chance to play against Mike, play a little bit against Kobe. You know, obviously LeBron is having his run. How do you look at, you know, I'm not asking you to rank, but how do you look at when you think greatest player to ever do it? Like, what comes to mind for you?
I guess domination, right? And when you talk about those three, you know, I don't, in my opinion, you know, Mike is the most dominant, you know? Six championships, set out 2 years, could have been eight. You know what I mean? To be able to win three, then sit out and say, I'm coming back.
And win three more.
Then I don't think people understand this. And I don't know if this is like a good thing, but like I listen to people talk about Mike sometimes and it kind of, I don't know, makes me uncomfortable the way they talk about him, right? Because I almost feel like people were scared of Mike. Right, I know, I'm not saying that. I don't want this to come off the wrong way. I'm kind of probably giving him credit for that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like he was able to put fear in people.
I seen
like
Ron Artest do it.
You know what I'm saying? Like that says a lot, right? You know, Kobe and LeBron, obviously, people know who they are and respect them and everything. But like the way people talk about Mike. You know what I mean?
Like Cam like, said, to me, that like says a horror story.
To me, that says a lot.
Mike coming.
You know what I mean?
He said, oh, hey, yo.
Yeah. But, you know, Kobe's greatness, you know, he was a reflection of, he's a mirror of MJ, you know? And then LeBron, you have to give him something different because he was different. He became a combination of Jordan and Kobe and Magic. And then his size, athleticism. So, like, I don't know. You have to, like, there's so many different characteristics. That's why whoever you feel is. But, like, I look at MJ, and I just look at the domination. And because I was in his era, yeah. I know the impact he made, the chills he gave people, which is crazy. But, you know, but, like, if you say LeBron's had the best career. If you just go numbers wise.
I say that all the time. Jordan is a better player, but LeBron had a better career.
If you go numbers wise, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then you got that little dude, Steph.
He's right in that conversation.
It's like he builds a case every year and he revolutionized, changed the game. Like that's when you change the game.
From grassroots
that's
to
why
the
Kobe
NBA.
Is a mirror of MJ. So I always go to MJ,
yeah.
you know? Yeah. And then LeBron is a different being. MJ is a different being. And Steph is a different, mm-hmm. like they are different. They changed things.
Mm-hmm. Steph and AI did the same thing basically yeah. for the game.
Yeah.
They changed
AI a little different though. AI a little different. AI changed the culture, and obviously he was a great player, but I think Steph and AI is different because Steph now has young people shooting three-pointers
mm-hmm.
in the fourth grade.
From grassroots
and he's
up.
Changed the game to what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
That's different,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion.
Yeah,
that's different.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's crazy from a standpoint, like when I work my boys out, like we start in the paint, get your touch, get your feel. That's how we all used to start. But now kids are starting, they put their shoes on and start shooting shots from half court. Like this, like Steph really changed just the outlook of basketball and house play.
And just want to, like Magic changed. Like you got to give these guys different.
The game changes.
That's why I think Magic should be in this conversation.
Definitely,
as well.
Definitely.
No one ever saw a 6'9" point guard. You know, just that's just never happened.
I got four Lakers in my top five.
So do I. Dude, let's talk about our top five. So who's, I'm going to go you for, who's your top five?
I'll go first, okay? Jordan, Kobe, Braun, Shaq, Tim Duncan. Mm. I mean, excuse me, Magic, Tim Duncan.
So no Shaq.
No Shaq.
Who you got?
Shaq is 5B.
I have MJ, Magic, Bird. MJ, Magic, Bird, LeBron. Then if I got to put a big, I'm going Hakeem.
Mm-hmm. Can't go so wrong.
Cold.
Can't go wrong.
The scene was so cold.
That's
so.
Why I say Tim
with
and Shaq.
Respect to Jabbar, but I like always like to talk in terms of like what I really witnessed, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm. That's why I picked him.
Yeah.
Because I see
firsthand. Yeah. Mine is what? MJ. And then you could put two or three, whoever you want. Cole, Bron, Magic, and Shaq. So I got four Lakers in mind too.
So we got the same one besides Tim and Shaq.
Yeah, I ain't mad at that. Man, quick hitters, we appreciate your time today. First thing to come to mind, let us know. One piece of advice you would give young hoopers.
Study the game, understand the game. Know that the game is over sooner than you think. Mm. Take full advantage of the opportunities. Be graceful, be humble. You know, I call it kind of cocky, humble, but you got to believe in yourself, but you also got to be humble enough to intake information.
Got to play the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a game to be played.
You had a childhood crush?
Pam Grier.
Ooh, Pammy. Sheba, baby.
Classic.
Oh,
man.
Pam Grier.
Damn, Pam.
Pam Grier. Mm.
Top three ball handlers of all time, in your opinion?
Just off the top, because that's something I got to really think about, but I'm going to say Kyrie. I got to say Isaiah, and I'm going to put Jamal Crawford.
Ooh, oh, I thought you about to say the other Jamal, because he in my top five.
Who's that?
Tinsley.
Oh, well, I ain't mad at that.
I seen him do some stuff in games.
I ain't mad at
crazy.
That.
One thing you wish you were better at?
That's a tough one. One thing I wish I was better at. I'm stumped.
Ask you that.
One thing I wish I was better at.
Let him think for a second.
One thing I wish I was better at is expressing my feelings. Mm. That's counseling right there, y'all. That's counseling. That's counseling. That's communication, dope. Expressing my feelings.
Maybe that, communication. Yeah. I don't know. That's a tough one. I don't know.
What about you?
Helping people understand me.
Helping people understand you.
I got to get better at helping people understand me. If that makes sense.
It doesn't, but I hear you.
You see what I said, but it makes sense. That's why I said it didn't make sense.
Because I'm so misunderstood.
This nigga said making people.
I'm so misunderstood. That's why I said that, because I knew it didn't make sense. That was my disclaimer.
Oh, shit.
One album or song to play over your career highlights.
Anything Jay-Z.
Anything Hov.
Anything Jay-Z. I did it my way.
Straight up.
What's that? Yeah.
Anything I did Jay-Z. It my way.
Best food in New York, or best little, like a duck off spot?
Oh no! Right now, I'll just say Brooklyn Chop House.
What's that? What kind of food is that?
Steakhouse. Yeah.
Spire.
Yeah.
We might have to put that on the company credit card.
It's downtown, and in, well, they're both downtown. We need to put that. One is lower. But
we have to
Brooklyn
put that on the
Brooklyn
All the Smoke production card.
Yeah,
we have to try that out.
One guest you could see on All the Smoke. Who would it be?
But
you have to help us get your answer on the show.
So basically, it's got to be.
I'm tired of answering this question because motherfuckers ain't been filling they void.
But that's what I'm about to tell you. I'm going to have a hard time because I don't mess with a bunch of people.
Straight up. So I don't fuck with nobody. So this question might not apply to me.
Yeah, that's hard. But somebody I like to see on here.
Chrissy Chin.
No, she got stories.
No, Chrissy Chin.
That's a good call, Jack.
No, that's a great
call. She raised all of us.
Straight up.
No, mm-hmm. That's a super call.
Yeah.
Chrissy Chin.
Yeah, she's dope.
Chrissy Chin.
She'd probably love it too, to be
honest with you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think she does so much and she gets if you know, you know.
If you know, you know.
Yeah, like who is that little lady? She's everywhere.
But like the harder the guys, like I said, the harder the NBA, If you ask any one of us about Krisha Chin, we all light up.
Yes.
We all speak highly about her.
She's like everybody's mom.
Yes.
Period. Well, Rob, man, we appreciate your time. Again, always been a big fan, and getting a chance to kind of peel back some layers was dope, man. So thank you for your time.
Guys having me, man.
Good luck the rest of the season, man. Definitely. That's a wrap. All the Smoke. You can catch us on All the Smoke Production YouTube. Is that where we at now?
Ooh, that's our own shit.
Yeah. We'll catch y'all next week, man.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
A rested child is a happy child. Sleep Tight Stories is a weekly podcast that brings comfort and joy to families worldwide with calming bedtime stories. The stories are relevant to children and spark wonder without overstimulation, so they can fall asleep and stay asleep. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. For a bedtime routine you'll miss when they're grown, Sleep Tight Stories.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.